薄いのアホ。
プリズムタワーメイクアップカードレ
ディー。 Welcome to Shoujo and Tell, where we discuss shoujo manga and tell who's hot and who's not, talk about themes, and just generally geek out. Today, June 28th, 2021, we'll be shoujo and telling about the series Rig Veda by Clamp. I'm your host, Ashley McDonald, and I'm joined by Journey Through All of Clamp Works buddy, Asher Soffin. Hello, Asher.
Hello, Ashley.
That's your one relation to me.
Yeah, I'm just your buddy.
Yep. No. Asher Soffin, who be you?
I guessed here a lot because I am the easiest for Ashley to schedule, you know, seeing as I am her boyfriend and live with her and cannot say no.
Whoa, you could say no.
I could say it. I suppose.
If you said it repeatedly, I would give up, you know?
I guess.
Listen, you naturally start reading, I lay something around, and you're like, oh, what's this? And then you read it faster than me, and that's just the relationship we have. So what's the point? You read anything, everything anyway, you might as well come here.
All right. It plays against us for this one in particular, because I read it a while ago, very quickly, and now I'm like, oh, what even happened?
Okay, I mean, yes, I will admit up front, dear listeners, that my intention had been to record about Rig Veda a while ago. I was like, all right, it's fine. I can get through it. It's all good. No. I remember reading Rig Veda in the past, the first two volumes, and being like, I am so bored. And that was still hella true. It probably took me a month just to get through Omnibus 1. From there, it's like, okay, like I took my time, my sweet, sweet time a little bit, but like not nearly that much time. But so Asher was a good boy and read it in the original timeline I had told him, which means that he read it like a month ago or more. And now he's here and this is a spoiler free section and he's going to give a plot synopsis.
I mean, all right. To be fair to me, besides the whole I read this weeks ago thing, it's hard to do a spoiler-free section when the story is about destiny and, like, tells you what the prophecy is on page one.
Yeah, but did you really see all that coming?
When I got to what happened, I was like, okay, I don't know why anyone was surprised.
Yeah, we'll get into it. Tell the people, read the prophecy or something then.
I don't have it open. Well, this story takes place in the realm of the gods. There is a god that is going to be born of the clan of Asherah that will gather the six stars. Is that what it's called?
Yes, the six stars.
The six stars and end the world. That about the sum of it? The six stars are people, and this god is one of them, this child of the clan of Asherah.
Yes, because everybody in this is a god, basically.
Right. Yeah. There's like one... Well, actually, was she human?
Shashi was originally a human and then became a priestess, which was like not really a human.
Yeah. I wasn't even thinking of her. I was thinking of Gige.
Oh, that's a good point. Was Gige human? I guess so.
She might have been, yeah. It doesn't really matter. The distinction between human and god and demon and whatever are all very fluid. Anyway, so okay. The plot is this child does get born, but they are sealed away for 300 years as a little infant baby thing. And then the scion of the Yasha clan, Lord Yasha.
Scion.
I'll use words.
Go on.
finds little baby Asherah. They're all named after their clans and it's the worst.
Is it?
Yes, because then it's like, if am I referring to Ashura? Am I referring to the Ashura problem. Clan?
Are you referring to this Gabumon or like all Gabumon? I know.
Yeah, yeah. Am I referring to... It, especially when it comes to like Ashura in particular. Yeah. Very difficult. But it makes it easier to keep track of the clans. It would be even easier if the clan names were like more distinct. The clan names are actually better than the real names a lot of the god characters have that aren't associated with a clan. I couldn't for the life of me tell you most of those names.
Like Zol Choten or whatever.
Who?
The nice of the four.
Of the generals?
Yeah, the four generals.
Okay.
The one with the crazy facial hair. I love him.
I mean, two of them do. Or maybe not.
The nice looking one.
Yeah. Anyway, this is sidetracking off the plot synopsis. But like this wandering plot synopsis that seems to have nothing to do with anything is kind of the experience of reading Rig Veda.
Yeah. We're just giving you an accurate portrayal.
Anyhow, Lord Yasha finds a little baby Ashura and sets them free. And little baby Ashura is said to bring destruction to everyone they meet. And they do. And that's the plot.
And that's the plot. We go around gathering the six stars so that we can destroy all the things.
Right. And I mean, they're aware of the prophecy, or at least some of them are. They're all aware of it, but some to more of a degree than others. But they're like, no, we're going to break this corrupt world, or we're not going to destroy the world at all. We're going to fight our destiny. It's going to be fine. And, well, we know how Clamp is about Hitsuzen.
Although it should be said that this is their first true published work, you know, traditionally published work that wasn't a doujin.
Right.
So this is their first real tackling with the Hitsuzen.
Yeah. I'm like, did they tackle it in their doujins? Unclear. I mean, one of their doujin was a Star Wars doujin. And maybe I could see them having to tackle that there.
Yeah. All right, I'm not going to speculate about Clamp's doujin.
Things he didn't read.
Yeah. I'm just saying that, yeah, I think the important things to know are this is Clamp, like, outside of story stuff, having read it, you know, is that it's Clamp's first traditionally published work. It started in 1989, and...
Woo, so did I.
Woo, 1989! The start of so many good things. I think it actually looks pretty good for the age that it was written. It's technically a shoujo. When I look it up, it's a shoujo, but it is in a magazine called Wings, which targets, you know, like an older teen audience. So I think on the Wikipedia, it was like, this is for 16 to 20 year olds, which like it better be at the very least, because,
oh, God, yeah.
Oh, goodness gracious. there is all of the content warnings, all content warnings must be applied.
Yeah.
To this manga. Just as a forewarning, if you have not read the Rig Veda yet. Also, the Rig Veda is like an actual Hindu text that this is very, 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 I'm going to emphasize very loosely, like, based on. I wouldn't even say it's based on it. It's like, oh, they got some general ideas and took some names and then made a manga, you know? Like,
yeah, the Rig Veda, the traditional one in Sanskrit literature, is a long, long series of poems, like odes to the gods, saying like, oh, hey, you're really good at this, you god of this. Your palaces are amazing. Where you step, flowers sprout. You know, it's poems of praise.
Mm.
And that's super not that's what super not Veda what this is.
No. The opposite of that. The exact opposite of that. Cool. Yeah, so I already said my level of familiarity with the series, which was that I had read two volumes as a much smaller human being. I probably wasn't actually physically smaller, but a much younger human being of like probably 13 years old or so. So over 15 years ago, and was just like, eh. And then I returned to it now, assuming that I would be much more open to it. And I think, having gotten to the end, I'm like, this is pretty smart. No, I will say having gotten to the end and also listened to Clampcast's two episodes about it already, which you should probably go listen to those episodes instead of this one. But whatever. Hey, whatever floats your boat. Listen to all of them. I was like, yeah, it's pretty smart. But like, I do not enjoy reading is really what it comes down to. Asher, had you read this before? No.
I had not, no. I knew of it as someone who was like, you know, I had my Clamp phase.
It's no Magic Knight Rares.
It's not.
No. Okay, so did you like it?
I found things to like. It is not really my thing.
It is not
It should be. It should be, right? I love fantasy politics. I love, you know, when the personal and the political intertwine, and also, like, there's magic and, you know, women warriors and gods and goddesses and whatever. But the I find the characters very, not just hard to relate to, but, like, annoying across the board, pretty much.
All of them? Most of them?
Most of them. There's a couple that I'm like, I want to see what you do, right? Otherwise, I find a lot of them really flat. And like, I get it. Clamp was just starting out. Or, you know, just starting out with their original content. But yeah, I mean, I was never... I'm never into the type of relationship also that Ashura and Yasha have.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, like, there's not a lot here for me. Because, like, the fantasy politics are really just sort of container for, like, and this is why these people are bad and why... And a vessel for, like, and this is why there's a conflict, rather than, like, oh, this is some cool world building.
Oh, yeah. If anything, I think the world absolutely makes no sense. Like, yeah, especially when they travel, it's just, like, they'll go somewhere and be like, oh, we traveled forever. And then at the end, they're like, oh, we went all the way south, and now we have to go back, like, all the way north, and it takes them, like, a hot second. I'm like, what? What is this world?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Yeah.
But what about the queerness?
Yeah, it's queer. Hooray. Look, you know, I grew up on later Clamp. There's queerness there, too, that I appreciate a lot more.
It's not as explicit, I feel, as in this, though. Not explicit, like, sexy explicit, but, like, textually canon, no holds bar. Explicitly, they are gay.
I think it depends on what you read. I mean, even looking back on Cardcaptors, I'm like, there were plenty of, like, explicitly queer people in Cardcaptors. Like, you can say Toya and Yuki never put it into the words we would use now, but Ruby Moon existed for your genderqueer needs. Tomoyo and Tomoyo's mom existed.
I still just feel like it wasn't as embracing or textually explicit as Rig Veda.
Maybe, and but it's lesbians. The plot was better. The plot was better and the characters were better. I can't just be there for the queerness, you know?
Okay, I mean, that's fair. It's just so funny because I'm like, I actually find Cardcaptor Sakura extremely boring as well. I don't like Clamp. Delete me.
Wow, why are you torturing yourself with all of Clamp drive-through?
Okay, I liked Tokyo Babylon a lot.
That one was really queer, too, and had a better plot.
Okay. I don't think I'm normally in stuff for the plot.
What are you in stuff for?
Oh, characters.
Okay. The characters are better in Tokyo Babylon 2.
Yeah.
And there are fewer of them.
Yeah.
And their names are easier to remember.
And their names are not Karyobinga.
Karyobinga is actually one of the easier ones for me to remember. You try to you get me to say anybody on the like the evil team. Supposedly. I only know that one because you say it a lot. If you asked me,
Bishamonten.
I know that one because Bishamonten appears in other things, right? Bishamonten is in Noragami. I know Bishamonten. Also, Bishamonten is a real god that appears in Japanese stuff all over the place. I don't only know Bishamonten from Noragami. I also know it from Air Gear. Anyway.
Digging yourself a deeper
and I also deeper know it hole. From Ranma.
Oh my god, the whole is just a never ending. Okay.
Yeah.
I do think Rig Veda is worth reading if you can do it. And like, there are a lot of reasons that you might not be able to do it, and that's fine by me as well. Because, oh my gosh, it is so gory. Which is also not an Ashley thing. Ashley is not into that.
Yeah, that didn't bother me as much.
No, I was like, why? Please stop. What is wrong with you? Like, in the way that I don't like to watch, you know, basically any adult TV, I'm like, I don't want to see adults just be bad all of the time. Like,
there are some very, very gruesome deaths repeatedly. You're not going to like X.
No, I don't expect to like X.
Maybe that's why it didn't bother me as much. I already read part of X. Also, other stuff.
I want to stick to the nice. Well, I want to stick to Tokyo Babylon was a good medium point for me. Magic Knight Rareth is good. I liked Tsubasa. Like, I want to stay in that place, you know, but no, right. I can't stay those in that place.
Those are the exceptions that prove the rule.
Yeah, but as I said earlier, I do think that this series does so many smart things that we can't go into in the spoiler-free section. But I think that there are a lot, like, all the plot twists at the end, you're like, you know what? Like, you earned most of those. especially for a story where you're like, you know where it's going! You know, from page two! Like,
yeah,
it tells you.
It tells you, it warns you, the characters repeatedly warn you throughout so you don't have a chance to forget. It's like, I don't know what you expected, characters.
Yeah. But it still makes it pay off in the end. It's like, okay. And, you know, yeah, if you really are super into Clamp, I mean, if you're super into Clamp, I assume you've already read this. But, you know, maybe if you're like, hey, I should read more Clamp because you've liked other things. Like, it is an interesting origin point into their normal themes.
Yeah, and it's gorgeous art.
It's so, you know, pretty.
Old school Clamp, flowy hair everywhere, big eyes, men whose, you know, their shoulders are 8 heads wide. You know, all that.
And their hips are like 2 heads wide.
If that. Usually I find the hips are like 1 head, maybe 1.5 wide.
Yeah. Yeah, so like there are good points about it. Like, I'm not gonna lie. There's at least one character whom I really like, but overall, like, yeah, it's not for me, you know, and that's okay because we're still gonna talk about it. Because this is Shoujo and Tell. I don't make those kinds of judgments, like dislike. That's not the point of this. Yeah, so if you haven't read Rig Veda yet, it is available in omnibus form from Dark Horse. I believe, as with all Dark Horse titles, that can mean that it's still hard to find in print, physically, because I don't, they're weird. They don't really keep everything in stock until they get a sense that, like, oh yeah, we really, really should reprint this, but there's a pandemic, so, like, it's probably harder. You know, everything's bad. But they are readily available digitally, if you want to go that way. They're very pretty omnibuses. If you want, you can also try to find a set of the Tokyopop versions from way back when. I think they both have their pros and cons, again, from listening to Clampcast podcast about it. The Tokyopop versions apparently have all the omakes and, like, side, you know, comments from Clamp themselves about what they're doing, like, in the story and in their lives. So, like, that provides more context. But Dark Horse probably has a better translation and overall is, like, prettier. So, like, you know, the same torture that it always is. Why can't we have all the nice things? Because we just can't. Can't have all the things. You have to pick one that seems okay. So now we are gonna go spoil all the things, as much as anything in Rig Veda is truly a spoiler, but they, like, yeah. We're gonna go do that. So if you haven't read it, probably don't listen anymore. If you hate gore, don't read it. If you love gore and pretty people stabbing each other, like, yeah, read this.
Stabbing each other is, like, the nicest thing they do.
Yeah. Like, like, and it's so pretty. So, all right, let's get into it. So, Asher. Destiny.
Destiny. I think you have more thoughts about this than I do.
Do I? I actually think the most interesting aspect of Rig Veda as it relates to Destiny is what it says overall about, like, how we structure stories more than anything else.
Let's start with that. That sounds cool.
That sounds cool. Well, just because, like, yeah, I don't know. It sets up all these expectations. Well, first of all, it has that, like, epic, religious-y feel about it, where it's like, these people are all gods, and really it's supposed to be a tale about, like, morality and, like, I don't know, you know, normally it's more like a fable where I feel like the telling of the story is much different, but even within that structure, it's like, wow, it just, like, destroyed it all by, like, making it was like, what if I take a tragic epic fantasy romance, but then I make it, like, 10 epic fantasy romances all in one, like, all interconnected, too close to each other, such that it all just implodes, and, like, we told you it would implode, but you still didn't, like, understand how much it would implode, right? Like, didn't understand the gravity of how much it would implode, and then, but then still have, like, a hopeful, it's okay, life will go on thing at the end. And I'm like, whoa, that's, like, that's a lot.
It's definitely a lot, yeah.
To pulled off as debut manga artist, I'm like, okay. I mean, props to you, I guess.
The way you phrased it just now, actually, so I never read the Rig Veda, right? Like, the actual Sanskrit document.
Yeah.
Or in translation either. I skimmed pieces of it looking for, well, like, for this podcast. I was like, what did they pull from?
yeah, exactly.
So I didn't read that. But I have read a translation of the Ramayana, or at least parts of it, and maybe a little bit of the Mahabharata, which are also big, sweeping, epic legends. Having to do with the Hindu gods and such, and demons and stuff. And what you just said about, like, having all these epic romances stacked on top of each other and, like, you don't know how it's going to implode. reminded me a bit of the Ramayana.
Yeah.
Which is also built on a romance, but like, you know, it pulls in everyone around. It becomes
characters.
Yes, it becomes a war and the gods are involved, even though this main romance is between two humans. Or, well, The thing with legends is a lot of times humans have divine parentage, like that's true in the West as well as in the East. So that epic feel, I think actually Rig Veda does do a good job of conveying sort of the flavor of perhaps a little bit of the source material there in that way.
Yeah, like that makes a lot of sense. I think the other thing that really got me was that they started to talk about how trying to change your destiny is a sin. And I was like, whoa, that's like a really weird concept to my Western brain, right? Like, we consider changing destiny like your destiny, basically. like if you're not changing your destiny, what are you even doing? Lounging around, doing nothing, right? Like you make your own destiny. You pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You do like all these things. You make your own dreams come true. Like, so such individualism. But apparently, this is what they said. I'm not trying to, you know, repeat everything Clampcast Pod already said because they already said it. But in their podcast, they did discuss how that actually relates more to the values of Hinduism, because it's supposed to be like, you know, they're trying to enforce kind of a societal control aspect of it, like keep the caste systems in place, hierarchical preservation, but also like you want a functioning society, right? Like that's you should not be selfish in a way, right? So like that's where the sin aspect comes in, where it's like you are going against what has been deemed good for everyone, therefore you are sinning. I'm like, okay, interesting.
Yeah. I didn't listen to the Clampcast's episodes on this, so I can't speak to that so much. I think, sin is a weird concept too. When you originally brought this up, I thought sin is a very Christian way of putting it. So I kind of wonder what the word was originally. Like, was destiny Hitsuzen? Like, do you know that for a fact?
Oh, I have no idea, no.
Because I think there are other words. There are definitely other words for that in Japanese. And sin I wonder about too. The influence of Indian culture on Japanese culture largely comes by way of Buddhism. And like by way of Chinese Buddhism. So like there's a lot of translation happening here from original like Sanskrit Hindu stuff to 1989 Clamp.
Right.
But at least in Buddhism, the ultimate goal, even with like karma and the caste system, is to escape the wheel of reincarnation. The point, we translate nirvana as enlightenment, but really it's more like non-existence. So I think that complicates things too, because Asura and Yasha don't escape this. They live on. So that's interesting too, in that light.
Yeah, but do you think that they have a sense of reincarnation so much as a sense of like they have a bunch of lineage and it becomes a point at the end that they're like, hey, you two who like each other in a romantic way, even though that's kind of creepy, you two cannot make a baby, basically, because Ashura is genderless, though they do use he pronouns throughout both Tokyo Pop and Dark Horse, which is very annoying. So if we say he, it's because we read it a bunch of times. But yeah, it's just like Ashura can't make babies and continue on the lineage of the Ashura clan. And Yasha, you are the last of your clan. So if you don't do it, like, if you stay with Ashura, then you'll both be the last of your clan. Like, do you accept that? And they're both like, yeah, whatever. This is fine, right? But, like, is that equivalent to reaching Nirvana? Is that?
I would say no.
Right.
I think those are different things. Although that's an interesting point. I guess being gods already... Well, no, I think even the gods can die and reincarnate. I think that's somehow how some of the gods get born. It's been a long time since I, you know, took comparative religion classes.
Mm.
Actually, it was a comparative lit class, so it wasn't even comparative religion.
You're like, I've just done so much religion now.
I just do religion. That's what
you
I
just
do.
Do religion now. I know. So that's helpful. Oh, I guess I was going to talk about how, like, yeah, like, gods in this case seem like they do die in this world eventually, but, like, Ashura is 300 years old and looks like he's, or looks like they're maybe 8, you know, like, I think canonically they're supposed to be 12 or something.
Are they? Okay, I didn't know that.
I think something still like weird. That. But I mean, like, technically, Yasha is not that much older than Ashura.
It's an experience weird... problem.
That's right. That's you. True. You're like, Ashura has been in a forest for 300 years.
Ashura has been in a what do you call them? Like. A cryopod for 300 years.
Ashura has been in a cryopod since he was born. They don't know anything.
Yeah, that's my problem.
Okay.
Also, they're in the body of a child.
Yep.
Your brain, I don't know about gods, but the human brain doesn't finish developing until it's 25.
What's that in god years?
I don't know.
1500?
Like... But if the body's still developed, I don't know. I don't know. Clamp.
Okay, to be fair, they were never like, Yasha once... to bang this tiny child body. They were always like, Yasha wants to protect child Ashura and maybe do something more with, like, adult-looking Ashura.
Yeah.
Teenage-looking Ashura. I wouldn't say he's adult-looking.
Yeah. I mean, Clamp and age differentiation has never been... great.
Their strong suit. Okay, so love, can it conquer everything?
Clearly not.
Clearly not?
Look at Soma and Kandapa.
Oh, that are true disaster lesbians who are the most interesting in this series.
True facts.
Okay, should we talk about Kandapa as it relates to can love conquer all then?
Love Kandapa. Okay. I certainly didn't conquer anything.
Okay. We'll tell the people about Kandapa then.
Kandapa. Oh, man. Like everything. No. All the introductions that happened in the first omnibus, no. I'm very confused about. Because it's like, was she Yasha's sister? No. But like, it's confusing.
Did I say that?
I think she's like, she treats Yasha like a brother, despite the fact that her mom was into Yasha. Or like, because of that fact.
Oh.
It was weird. And Yasha thought it was weird too.
And Yasha was like, I'm out, yo, bye.
Yeah. So Kandapa is the court musician, like the most famous musician in the whole god court. Thing. Very, very beautiful. Appears to be very pacifistic. Is that a word?
Pacifistic? Yeah. Sure. We know what you mean.
Yeah. And smiles a lot. Very charming. has her own mind, very stubborn. You know, I instantly liked her because she's got a personality, and that's such a rarity in this manga.
Right. Her and Kujaku.
Yeah. Yeah, those are probably my two favorite characters.
And Ryu. I would say Ryu.
Oh, okay. Ryu has a personality.
He doesn't have a motivation
to
go with them, which is a different problem, but he does have a personality.
He does have a personality, even if it's like a very basic boy personality.
Yes.
No, my favorites are Kendappa, Kujaku, and Karura.
Yes. Okay, that's reasonable.
Yes. And then Ryu, but like less so than Karura. What else can I say about Kendappa? I mean, I guess I can say everything because this is the spoiler section already.
Yeah, you can say anything.
Yeah. Well, before I get there, Kendappa also has in her service, more or less, even though she's a servant of a different person, a different lady, the last survivor of the Soma clan, Soma. And they're in lesbians.
They definitely are.
Yeah. Before Soma heads off, because Soma, of course, is one of the six stars. So she goes with, she's like the first one to go with Yasha and Ashura. Because she wants to avenge her clan, because Taishakuten?
I always forget. Honestly.
The big bad. The big bad sky god dude killed her whole clan because they have special blood that can heal anything, I think. That makes sense.
Soma? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Shakuten.
Taishakuten. Okay. And before Soma leaves, Kendappa, like, gives her, they share a pair of earrings. It's very sweet. But Kendappa is also one of the four generals, the god generals who work for Taishakuten. And she's probably his most loyal, even though she works against him in some ways. She fights for him. It's a weird line for her to tread, honestly.
Oh, she's trying real hard.
Yeah.
She's because, like, she also is not just Soma, right? It's like Karura. She also hides, basically.
Yeah, she loves Karura. She loves Yasha. She loves Ashura. I don't think she has any particular feelings for Ryu, but
fair enough.
Yeah, she has really strong connections to most of the six stars, and she herself is one of the six stars.
Uh-oh, SpaghettiOs.
Yeah, and then they share a psychic bond when they all find each other, and it's like, and you still fight for Taishakuten because Kendappa's philosophy is that she is loyal to whoever is strongest.
Even though she loves Soma the most, she's like, I can't not kill you because you're not the strongest, Soma. Like,
which is sort of like, if Kendappa had switched sides, I think their side would have been strongest. You know? Like, it was all Taishakuten's forces could do. Like, evil Ashura is probably the strongest. Probably stronger than Taishakuten.
Probably, but she's not supposed to follow evil Ashura.
Why not? Everyone else did.
Also, I feel like... I feel like this is supposed to come down to an individual level. So, I mean, yeah, it doesn't seem like she considers the fact that evil Ashura is probably stronger. But also, evil Ashura doesn't give orders. Evil Ashura is just like, ha ha, Kendappa stab. You're dead now. Bye.
Yeah. Anyway, fascinating character. Still don't fully understand.
Wait, how did we phrase it when we were talking about her? Like, her, like, loyalty to strength over love or whatever?
Oh, I don't remember exactly, but the way I would phrase it now is she is more devoted to her devotion to strength than to her devotion to love.
Mm.
Like, that is more important. Like, it's not that her vows are more important than her feelings or anything, right? It's no, her feelings are that strength is more important than love, than those feelings she has for people.
Yeah.
It's not exactly how we phrased it before, but such is life.
Such as we can't record our whole lives, everybody, even though sometimes we're like, it would be good.
No, it would be terrible. And also you can do it, and then you have the Truman Show or Twitter.
Then you just have Twitter. No, not Twitter. God.
Actually, you would have Facebook, which is worse.
Oh, yes. Goodness gracious, no. But like, I feel like in the end, you're supposed to get that love can conquer all, because Asha becomes good at the end because Yasha raised them to change their destiny from being a rage destruction monster.
I don't think love conquers all, but love does make a change. I think that is an important takeaway from this whole manga. I think that's a great lesson. You know, I'm all about the whole, like, people's connections to one another change things, and they can change destiny. I think that's great. But I wouldn't say love conquers all, because they do. Because
so many of them die.
So many of them died. And like, yeah.
It took so much. Happened. Yeah, it took so much to make Asha not a kill everybody rage monster, you know?
Yeah.
And like, they still became that for a bit. Although, I believe, as Clampcast pointed out, they were like, we only really see Asha kill one person, and then everybody else kind of kills themselves, or somebody else kills them.
Yeah.
Notably, like, Kendappa kills Soma, then kills herself.
Right.
Tai Shakuten kills himself.
Does he?
He does.
Look, it's been a month.
It's been a month. Kujaku kills himself.
He does? I thought he lived.
I'm pretty sure he kills himself.
Huh. That sucks.
Well, that's like, he didn't have to, but he was like, oh, I love that, you know, like, Yasha is so devoted to, oh no, well, he did have to, because he reawakens Asha.
Okay.
After, like, grilling Yasha about the level of his love, being like, hey, Asha, stop being destruction rage monster, but they're not going to wake up. Are you really going to sit here forever and wait for them? And Yasha's like, yeah, they're the most precious thing to me. And then Kujaku's like, oh, that's, like, so nice, you know? Like, that really gives me faith and stuff. In, like, good stuff. So I'm going to sacrifice myself. Speed this along, you know?
I forgot he did that, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Kujaku.
Oh, Kujaku. Man, what a confusing character.
What? What do you mean?
What do I mean? What could I possibly mean?
Yeah, I mean, seems self-explanatory.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
He's a demon who came from the loins of the old god king and the old god king's sister.
Who was a priestess.
She had the gift of seer. Prophecy. Yeah.
Yeah, that's different.
Different things. How dare you?
My bad.
And then, yeah, he got the mark of sin for their actions. And I'm like, that's garbage.
Yep. And then he lived up to it. A bit.
Sure, but that's because everybody was like, you're garbage, demon with purple eyes.
Yeah, I know.
I do think, since we're on this topic now, I do think, I don't know, this is very, don't take this the wrong way, everybody, but just like, throughout the story, they kept being like, everybody thinks that the rule of the old God King was great and peaceful and awesome, but it wasn't as awesome as you think it was. And I kept waiting to be like, okay, oh my God, they're going to reveal that this world of the gods is all on the backs of like massive amounts of suffering, like sacrifice tons of people a day to their to their lavish lives. And oh my God, it's going to be so terrible. And then the big reveal is that the God King slept with his sister. And I'm like, that is terrible. Yes. Although I think it was consensual?
I actually don't think so. He also locked her up in a dungeon.
I do remember him locking her up in a dungeon.
And then when their son was born in this prison, just left Kujaku there.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, like, those things, very bad. Yeah, bad. But I was like, but the scale of that badness is, like, it's small, you know? Like, it doesn't affect...
It's within the family.
Yeah, like, I think part of the point of the manga is that everything within their family... Not everything within their family, but everybody in this manga is too caught up in each other, and that's, like, their problem, right? And that's like why they all end up dead, is that they're all like too intricated into each other's lives. They need to diversify, you know, or whatever. But I think in this instance, that like point did not land for me. Like it did not drive home that point to a degree that like I appreciated it at all, you know, like... Especially, it's one of those things where it's like, when you make the people so evil that they're like cartoonishly evil, but like, that's like the one evil thing he did. It's like almost not evil enough for this universe because they're all so bad, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I won't shun you.
Yeah. So like, I'm not saying it's not bad. I'm just saying it actually wasn't bad enough to be like, oh my gosh, you don't. And I mean, maybe actually only like Kujaku says that. No, I feel like somebody else said it though too. My point is they're all right to want to go back to the old God King regardless of that happening, I feel.
I mean,
your choice
is... Taishakuten was like, you know, purposely making things miserable. In a lot of ways.
Yeah, but how is he good at all? He never did any good thing in his life.
No, he didn't. No, that's what I'm saying. It's like, they are right to hate him. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you're trying to present a third choice that I'm like, no. I don't assume that there's a third choice. And between the two choices, it makes sense for them to want to go back to the old God King.
Well, I just feel like that's actually not a choice. Because he's dead.
Right. They should really just want sweet, sweet boy Tenno.
They should. And I think the whole point of him living is he does become the king. I mean, his name literally means Heaven King.
Heaven King!
I'm Whoa. Just saying.
He's destined for greatness.
He is, and he's a good boy.
He is a good boy. Poor him being in love with a lesbian.
All good boys fall in love with a lesbian here and there.
Okay. Is that true?
All right. I don't know. I like it. I adopt this as my headcanon.
Okay. I love that one of my notes was Taishakuten, Gaslight King of the Century. In regard... to, I have no idea what you're talking about, re Karura's dead sister's body.
Oh, God.
Yeah, this guy. Bad. He's bad, so dude. Bad.
Awful, awful, awful dude.
And, like, again, the source, like, not the source of his badness, but the source of why he does everything is that he's trying to prevent the destiny of Ashura becoming a destruction machine, because the previous Lord Asha had been like, I really want my child to live. and not succumb to this destiny where they destroy everything. That would be nice. So Lord Ashura goes to Taishakuten and is like, hey, you willing to help me out in that regard? Like, what's your price? And Taishakuten's like, you. Like, I want you. And it's like, so then they have a pretty much non-consensual relationship. And I'm just like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
Only Tenno is good.
Soma's good. Ryu is good. He's a good rowdy boy.
A good rowdy boy.
Rasetsu was all right.
Oh, I did love good boy Rasetsu.
There are plenty of good women who die within a chapter.
Yeah, I was like, I really feel like the guy like really makes an impression, even though she lives for 5 pages, you know?
She really does. I'd read a manga about Gige.
Right? Where's that manga?
Yeah, really. Just delete Yasha. Replace with Gige.
Oh my gosh. Delete Yasha. Yeah.
Unpopular opinions.
I mean, Yasha is very handsome, but like he has a twin brother, Rasetsu, and I'm like, yeah, that guy, he's fine. I'll take him.
Are they twins? No. They have different mothers.
Oh, right. Yeah. But they look so similar.
True.
Rasetsu only looks wilder because he's like not trying, I feel. You know? Like that's his preferred aesthetic.
Yes.
And then he has pure innocent wife. What did I say her name was? Shara.
Yeah, she was good.
Do you like her?
I do like her. But you know how I feel about, you know, women who try really hard to be good and sweet and then get shafted by the canon they're in.
I feel like she was almost too good and sweet. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, she was like perfect wife.
She is a waifu.
Yeah, and I still liked her. I don't remember why.
I feel like Clamp's just good at that character type.
Yeah. Perfect. I mean, there are a few of them, or at least there are at least two of them. There was her, and there was Shachi's sister. Kara? Is that her name? From way at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The other priestess.
The one who dies immediately, yeah.
Yeah.
But I felt like Shara made choices that I appreciated. Like, when she found out that Rasetsu was dead, and that it was Ashura's fault, or Yasha's fault, or whatever she found out. Like, what she then did, even if it was just letting them go, I was like, all right, I appreciate you. Made that choice own. Yeah.
She had you decided autonomy.
What was important. Exactly.
Yeah. She could have chosen to be terrible about it, but she was like, nah. Nah, because Rasetsu loved his brother, Yasha. I feel like what we're really saying is that the characters we like the most are the ones that leave the least impression upon the overall plot and, like, themes of the story.
Which is usually how my taste in things goes.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Great. Excellent. Glad we got there. So let's answer some listener questions definitively about the characters.
Okay.
The first ones are from the Clampcast Pod, who I guess maybe are excited that we're talking about it, even though our episodes are not as good as theirs, but that's okay. So, like, how do you two feel about the ending? That's one question. The relationship dynamics, and do you have a favorite character?
Oh, my favorite character is Kendappa.
Yeah, Kendappa is by far... I remember, even though, like, I'm a sucker reading stories, actually. Like, it's very easy to fool me. So when it was revealed that she was Jaikakuten or whatever the general name is, I was like, Kendappa! I was
like, what? Oh, babe, you didn't... Aww.
I'm so slow. No, it's more fun this way. It's more fun to be a slow reader, though, because then you're, like, shocked at every little thing, and, like, you have fun, you know? Like,
fair enough.
Yeah. I actually do really like Ryu, too.
Because he's more your type than mine.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like Ryu because I feel like he's both very immature, but then also the only one within the story who's like, hey, Yasha, you don't have a personality. Hey, Yasha. Like,
yeah, he did say that.
Yeah. Hey, Yasha, nothing you do makes any sense. Hey, everybody. Are you sure we should trust Ashura? Like, I feel like he's the only one who, like, knows stuff, actually.
He's the only one with any emotional intelligence.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah. I like him. He's a good boy. Yeah, my second... Oh. My second place after Kandapa, I have to pick between Kujaku and Karura.
Yeah, you initially said Kujaku.
Yeah, and now I'm thinking back, and I'm like, Kujaku in the last part of the manga, like, I, like, liked him less, right? Like, I thought he was fascinating at the beginning, and then I was, as I found out more, I was like, okay, this is juicy. And then, like, I don't know, he just kind of did nothing but prophesize and hold a massive grudge. Hold a staff. Not what I was going to say, but
okay, sure.
in the last part, and I was like, you're not fun anymore, Kujaku. So I think I would actually have to pick Karura, because she goes from, like, you know, I'm inclined to like a character like her. Strong female warrior, loves her sister, trying to do the right thing within the constraints of her situation. Justice.
Yes.
Love her. And then she is freed. And I love her after that. She's just, like, amazing. So I would have to pick Karura after Kandapa.
I think Karura brings up a steady third place for me. Like, watching Karura get broken is actually somewhat satisfying, and watching her be like, oh, no, all the gloves are off now. Like, this is you.
Yeah.
What is this? Like, you know?
I feel like Karura might actually be, like, the strongest emotional plot line throughout the series.
Yeah. No, for sure. Because I feel like, yeah, in the beginning, people get dropped real fast. Like, there's so many things happening in the beginning, and yet it's also boring again.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to determine from that, like, what's important, who's important, and then, like, what information is actually important. Mm-hmm. Whereas by the time Karura comes in, it's like, okay, you can tell Karura is, like, big, right? Like, she's the one, aside from, I would say, like, I feel like Soma and Ryu don't really get much, even though they're the first two of the six stars to join after, you know, primary six stars being Ashura and Yasha. Like, they're the first two to join, but, like, not nearly as important as Kandapa or Karura.
Yeah, it's like, they're the first two who join, but they're already such good people, and they're already free, pretty much, of their constraints, right? Soma is the last of her clan. Ryu has a weird excuse that somehow works for him.
Yeah, Ryu is really weak, but, like, fine, whatever.
It's like, I almost believe that everyone thinks he's dumb enough to do this, right?
Okay.
I think Karura is the first time we see, like, we're introduced to her as an antagonist. She does try to get in our main character's way. And then we see why she does it. And those reasons are so, like, relatable and important. And, like, you see how happy her sister makes her. And then her sister gets murdered brutally. And you're like, oh, no.
Yeah, even though she did everything, you know, Tai Chakuten wanted her to do.
Yeah.
And then he's just, like, the most epic asshole to her. Like,
yeah. So, no, it is very satisfying. It's satisfying because it's the first time we have such an emotional connection, I feel, to the story. That's what's satisfying.
Yeah. So Karura is solid. Okay, wait. The one thing with Karura that I didn't like was that they're like, okay, she fakes her death by falling, like by jumping out of her window. And I'm like, but y'all know that they ride birds. Why would you? You know, like I was just like, this doesn't make sense. Like it was a very poor excuse in my mind. But whatever, fine. Especially since, like, that's fine. If they had found her body, like, sure. But they're like, oh, yeah, she jumped out a window. We didn't find her body. It's like, come on. What are you talking about? But, like, you know, in line with how the prophecy was like, yes, the six stars will bring destruction and very bad things. And they're like, eh, but Daishakuten is bad. So, like, how bad can it really be? You know? Just ignoring.
It's really bad.
Yeah, ignoring what's right in front of them, right? Like, so it's in line with that. How do we feel about the ending? I mean, like, that's just such a big question. Overall, I think the ending is what makes the manga something worth reading. However, it's also one of Clamp's longer works. Like, they rarely, very few of their series are this long. Cardcaptor, okay, so the exceptions that I can think of are Cardcaptor Sakura is 12 volumes, so comparable length. X tapped out at 18 volumes or something. Tsubasa is 28 volumes plus the 3 volumes for a little continuation thing. So that's 31 volumes. That's like extreme exception because I think
that's their longest.
Yeah, that's their longest by far. And XXXHolic is also somewhere around like is like between X and Tsubasa or something. So like as far as I know, they only have 4 other series that reach like double digits, right? So like the ending is very smart, especially for a debut manga, but I'm like, but it was too long and slow like in getting there, which has less to do about the ending and more to do about everything else. I understand, but like goodness gracious. Also, I don't, it's like hard to say that when literally 80% of the characters die. Like, they die very beautifully. That stabbing of Soma by Kentapa is like, wow, that is a spread, you know? But, like, goodness gracious.
Yeah. I mean, so for me, when I care about 3 characters, none of whom are Yasha and Ashura, the ending is not particularly satisfying. I think talking about it on this podcast and like getting to the point of like, oh yeah, love changed one little thing and that does make a huge difference, even if it's so small in the grand scheme of things. Like, yes, love does change destiny, even if it's just a pebble in a river, right? That's still a change. Like, that was, I found some peace with that, but like, I was not here for that. So like,
yeah,
having only that consolation is like, you know, it's like getting a 1-star out of a gacha.
Yeah, I mean, I can actually agree with that. Like, I'm not so invested in Yasha and Ashura because I think they're really boring. Not only do I think they're really boring, it's just like it's so hard to relate to Yasha when he's so disconnected from reality. And like, yeah, they're all gods, but like he's still the most disconnected from reality, I feel, mm-hmm. of like human motivations in any way. Like, Ashura is a child and has some real emotions over being abandoned by their mom, and I'm like, that's totally fair and I can understand that. But like, Yasha and Ashura as the end game love can change a person thing just made me be like, I don't care that much, you know? Like, yeah. This talk about how they can't carry on their lineages, like, yeah, don't care. Also, who would want that, you know? Like, they should not want that. Yeah. So overall, it's like, this manga is is complicated. Complicated feelings about this manga. Overall, find it very hard. I actually want to ask how do we feel about relationship dynamics, but from a different person wrote in. This person was at Roberta88Grace on Twitter. What's your favorite and more nuanced relationship portrayed here, in your opinion? Not necessarily romance. I was going to say it's not that nuanced, but when I think about it and what I heard on ClamCastPod, I'm like, no, it's more nuanced than I think. I really like the relationship actually between Kujaku and Ashura. One, because certainly in the beginning they have a more playful, like, you know, Kujaku's always like, this is how you handle children, Yasha. Get a personality, Yasha. Like, like, we're having fun over here. Do you ever have fun, Yasha? Like, type relationship, which is fun. But then, you know, part of what Ashura and Kujaku share is, you know, being rejected by their parents for reasons, like, completely out of control. And in fact, their own parents' fault, right, for, like, making them in the first place.
That's a good one. It's hard to follow that. No, it's a really good one. My favorite, more nuanced relationship portrayed here might be Kendappa and Karura. Because I feel like Kendappa and Soma, you know, as much as it's great that they're in love and lesbians and, like, that's not the weird thing. The weird thing is that Soma is, like, you know, not supposed to be alive, so they have to keep her hidden.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really like the friendship between Kendappa and Karura more.
Yeah. I feel like Kendappa and, like, anybody who's not Soma is somewhat of a, like, who's not Soma or Tenno, basically, is, like, fairly interesting. Like, her and Zolchoten are also kind of interesting in that, like, they're ostensibly the good, like, they're helping, quote-unquote, the good, like, the six stars, right? And don't want to see all this senseless violence kind of stuff happening. But then they also are still super both loyal to Tai Shakuten.
Yeah.
They both only rebel in the slightest of ways, so they're fun.
They are fun. Like, watching people, like, try to square away their own strong senses of right and wrong. All these people are gods, right? And some of them are warrior gods with very noble ideals. Bishamonten is in almost every incarnation, even outside of this, like, you know, the coolest warrior god. So yeah, seeing Tai Shakuten's people, like, try to square what's happening with their own senses of justice and what is right and wrong is really fascinating. That's why Kendappa's fascinating. Like, it's not about right or wrong with her, really. It's about who's strongest. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are all pretty good. Yeah, relationships. I feel like otherwise it's really hard to pick somebody, like, relationships that are not horrific. it's kind of part of the problem, you know, like, romantic or otherwise. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it kind of, like, how Tenno tries to be, like, he knows that both of his parents are bad. maybe he doesn't know that his mom is as bad, but like, yeah, I feel like she's always ignoring him, either like doting on him or like not really paying attention to what he wants though. But he's such a good boy with her and stuff. And even though he knows that she, you know, threw Ashura out and everything, and he's like, oh, but I want to know my big brother and stuff, my big sibling. Like, Tenno is trying so hard to be, like, not just a good boy, but, like, pretty aware that, you know, he can't, like, he could try to fight people, and one, he would lose, and two, if he does that, right, like, he is no better than them, right, in the end. Like, he's like, mm-hmm. I cannot use, like, I feel like he is, like, I cannot use their tactics to make myself, to insert myself as a higher, more powerful, like, ruler, possibly the actually the God King, because then that does not make me better than my dad.
He's trying really hard to find a solution that works for everybody, is how I feel about him. He's trying to fix it, even though, like, he has done none of the wrong here except exist, right? He's kind of in the same position as Ashura.
Right. I think before we had our audio issues, this is going to say that, like, Kujaku is one foil for Ashura, but then the more obvious one is Tenno because they're brothers, right?
Like, right. I actually feel like Tenno is the less obvious foil because he's not around Ashura that often. And it's hard to see that they're in the same position. I didn't think of that until just now.
Well, yeah, you don't get the sense that they're in, like, the same position, I guess, until you think about how Tenno is like, yeah, his dad doesn't pay attention to him at all. His mom is just super manipulative and, like,
yeah.
Like, sure, she didn't go put him in a bubble in a forest, you know, but, like, did that make it that much better?
Right. Yeah, no, he's a good boy.
Good boy. Tenno for president.
Tenno for Sky King.
Tenno for Sky King. That's right. Okay, the final series of questions I don't think we're going to have good answers for, but I'm a woman of the people, you know, I give them what they want. So, at Analicious on Twitter had asked your thoughts regarding the censorship in the ending of the new Dark Horse print, unlike the Tokyo Pop print, plus the extra chapter in the art book. So I actually couldn't find any evidence on the internet because I only had the first two volumes of the Tokyo Pop print from way back when in the day. And unsurprisingly, perhaps, I do not, in fact, try to track down literally every copy of every manga that I read. As fun as that would be, you know, to do a compare and contrast between translations, I don't normally do that. If it happens, it's by happy circumstance. But I did try to research what the censorship would be, and I didn't find anybody raging about it on the internet. I searched on Twitter, you know, Google, the normal places, tried various search terms because I know I gotta get the SEO, but I was unable to find what the difference would be if there was one. I'm kind of just like, what would you censor in this? It's all so horrific. You know, like, you can't escape, like, how Fox Kids had been airing The Vision of Escaflowne and trying to edit it. And then at some point they were like, you know, you just can't edit out that amount of murder and butts, you know, like, we can't do that. So they just gave up. Like, I don't know what you would do here. Yeah. And then I would say also, I don't really have access to any extra stuff. I do try to keep this podcast, like, only what we get in America legally. And maybe we get the art books, but, like, Clamp Things, the licensing of Clamp Things is so freaking confusing now. I don't know who owns what of anything. I just assume everything is slowly going, reverting back to Kodansha. Oh, yeah. The only other thing is that I would say is that, like, Clampcast people didn't mention any censorship between Dark Horse and Tokyo Pop versions in their podcast, and they actually did read, like, one of them read the Dark Horse version, and the other one read the Tokyo Pop version, as far as I recall, so I would think that would have possibly come up there. It didn't. And Clampcast is my word of God now, so you should go to their episodes. Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anything else we really missed out on here. Normally we do like a shipping corner, but I don't think that's necessary in this. I don't really like ship anyone. And I think most of the couples have come up naturally as like, ugh. Like, here's why they're ugh, you know?
And like, you know, we're not here to yuck anybody's yum. It's just these particular couples and their dynamics are not for us.
Yeah, like the only one I wholeheartedly actually ship is Rasetsu and Shara.
Aren't they cute?
I'd read a manga about them.
But you can't because they're dead.
But I can't because they're dead. But then again, Clamp just reuses all their characters. So like, maybe I can.
That's true. Hope springs eternal.
Hope springs eternal. That's what this manga taught me. Is it not? Yeah, I think that's a great place to end. Hope springs eternal, my friends. Okay, thanks for listening to Shoujo and Tell. Comments, questions, constructive criticism, concerns. Need to tell us how much you loved these pretty people dying? Email shoujoandtell@gmail.com or leave a comment on the episode's YouTube page. We're at Shoujo and Tell on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram. Asher, are people allowed to find you on the internet these days?
I don't have much going on. If you like Octopath Traveler fanfiction, I'm working on one, but I'm not posting it yet. Maybe by the time this episode comes out, you can check me out at Dashery on an archive of our own.
Wow, yep, you can read Asher's Haven fanfics with me, our silly Haven fanfics.
If you like Homestuck fanfiction, I have some stuff there.
Yep.
Oh, some Final Fantasy 15, I guess. But I didn't finish the good ones.
Only the bad ones. Great. Are you excited every time you see a new episode from us? If so, please consider leaving a rating on Apple Podcasts. This will help the show reach more hearts, or at least ears. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back next time for the first third of Hanakimi. So that's volumes 1-8. We're going back to the 1990s for better and for worse. Stay tuned until then. Bye.
Bye.
Remember, never stop digivolving.
Stop digivolving.
Digivolve your differences.
No.
Digivolve your differences.
Sheena! It's okay, Sheena.
It's just so lavender.